Chapter 42. As Vinicius approached the walls, he found it easier to reach Rome than penetrate to the middle of the city. It was difficult to push along the Appian Way, because of the throng of people. Houses, fields, cemeteries, gardens, and temples, lying on both sides of it, were turned into camping places. In the Temple of Mars, which stood near the Porta Appia, the crowd had thrown down the doors, so as to find a refuge within during night hours. In the cemeteries the larger monuments were seized, and battles fought in defense of them, which were carried to bloodshed. Ustrinum, with its disorder, gave barely a slight foretaste of that which was happening beneath the walls of the capital. All regard for the dignity of law, for family ties, for difference of position, had ceased. Gladiators drunk with wine seized in the emporium gathered in crowds, ran with wild shouts through the neighboring squares, scattering, trampling, and robbing the people. A multitude of barbarians, exposed for sale in the city, escaped from the booths. For them the burning and ruin of Rome was at once the end of slavery and the hour of revenge, so that when the permanent inhabitants, who had lost all they owned in the fire, stretched their hands to the gods in despair, calling for rescue, these slaves with howls of delight scattered the crowds, dragged clothing from people's backs, and bore away the younger women. They were joined by slaves serving in the city from of old, wretches who had nothing on their bodies, save woolen girdles around their hips, dreadful figures from the alleys, who were hardly ever seen on the streets in the daytime, and whose existence in Rome it was difficult to suspect. Men of this wild and unrestrained crowd, Asiatics, Africans, Greeks, Thracians, Germans, Britons, howling in every language of the earth, raged, thinking that the hour had come in which they were free to reward themselves for years of misery and suffering. In the midst of that surging throng of humanity, in the glitter of day and of fire, shone the helmets of Praetorians, under whose protection the more peaceable population had taken refuge, and who in hand-to-hand battle had to meet the raging multitude in many places. Vinicius had seen captured cities, but never had his eyes beheld a spectacle in which despair, tears, pain, groans, wild delight, madness, rage, and license were mingled together in such immeasurable chaos. Above this heaving, mad human multitude roared the fire, surging up to the hilltops of the greatest city on earth, sending into the whirling throng its fiery breath, and covering it with smoke, through which it was impossible to see the blue sky. The young tribune, with supreme effort, and exposing his life every moment, forced his way at last to the Appian Gate. But there he saw that he could not reach the city through the division of the Porta Capena, not merely because of the throng, but also because of the terrible heat from which the whole atmosphere was quivering inside the gate. Besides, the bridge at the Porta Trigenia, opposite the Temple of the Bona Dei, did not exist yet, hence Woso wished to go beyond the Tiber and to push through to the Pons Sublicius, that is, to pass around the Aventine and through a part of the city covered now with one sea of flame. That was an impossibility. Vinicius understood that he must return toward Ustrinum, turn from the Appian Way, cross the river below the city, and go to the Via Portuensis, which led straight to the Trans-Tiber. That was not easy, because of the increasing disorder on the Appian Way. He must open a passage for himself there, even with the sword. Vinicius had no weapons. He had left Antium just as the news of the fire had reached him in Caesar's villa. At the Fountain of Mercury, however, he saw a centurion who was known to him. This man, at the head of a few tens of soldiers, was defending the precinct of the temple. He commanded him to follow. Recognizing a tribune and an Augustan, the centurion did not dare to disobey the order. Vinicius took command of the detachment himself, and, forgetting for that moment the teaching of Paul touching love for one's neighbor, he pressed and cut the throng in front with a haste that was fatal to many who could not push aside in season. He and his men were followed by curses and a shower of stones, but to these he gave no heed, caring only to reach freer spaces at the earliest. Still he advanced with the greatest effort. People who had encamped would not move, and heaped loud curses on Caesar and the Praetorians. The throng assumed in places a threatening aspect. Vinicius heard voices accusing Nero of burning the city. He and Poppaea were threatened with death. Shouts of, "Anio, histrio, buffoon, actor, matricide," were heard round about. Some shouted to drag him to the Tiber, others that Rome had shown patience enough. It was clear that were a leader found, these threats could be changed into open rebellion which might break out any moment. Meanwhile, the rage and despair of the crowd turned against the Praetorians, who for another reason could not make their way out of the crowd. The road was blocked by piles of goods, borne from the fire previously, boxes, barrels of provisions, furniture the most costly, vessels, infants' cradles, beds, carts, and packs. Here and there they fought hand to hand, but the Praetorians conquered the Viponius multitude easily. After they had ridden with difficulty across the Via Latina, Numitia, Ardea, Lavinia, and Ostia, and passed around villas, gardens, cemeteries, and temples, Vinicius reached at last a village called Vicus Alexandri, beyond which he crossed the Tibet. There was more open space at this spot, and less smoke. From fugitives, of whom there was no lack even there, he learned that only certain alleys of the Trans-Tiber were burning, but that surely nothing could resist the fury of the conflagration, since people were spreading the fire purposely, and permitted no one to quench it, declaring that they acted at command. The young tribune had not the least doubt then that Caesar had given command to burn Rome, and the vengeance which P.E. 9 plea demanded seemed to him just and proper. What more could Mithridates or any of Rome's most inveterate enemies have done? The measure had been exceeded. His madness had grown to be too enormous, and the existence of people too difficult because of him. Vinicius believed that Nero's hour had struck, that those ruins into which the city was falling should and must overwhelm the monstrous buffoon together with all those crimes of his. Should a man be found of courage sufficient to stand at the head of the despairing people, that might happen in a few hours. Here vengeful and daring thoughts began to fly through his head. But if he should do that? The house of Vinicius, which till recent times counted a whole series of consuls, was known throughout Rome. The crowds needed only a name. Once, when 400 slaves of the prefect Pedanius Secundus were sentenced, Rome reached the verge of rebellion and civil war. What would happen today in view of a dreadful calamity surpassing almost everything which Rome had undergone in the course of 8 centuries? Woso calls the Quirites to arms, thought Vinicius, will overthrow Nero undoubtedly, and clothe himself in purple. And why should he not do this? He was firmer, more active, younger than other Augustians. True, Nero commanded 30 legions stationed on the borders of the empire, but would not those legions and their leaders rise up at news of the burning of Rome and its temples? And in that case Vinicius might become Caesar. It was even whispered among the Augustians that a soothsayer had predicted the purple to us ho. In what way was he inferior to us ho? Perhaps Christ himself would assist him with his divine power. Maybe that inspiration was his? Oh, would that it were! Exclaimed Vinicius, in spirit. He would take vengeance on Nero for the danger of Lydia and his own fear. He would begin the reign of truth and justice. He would extend Christ's religion from the Euphrates to the misty shores of Britain. He would array Lydia in the purple, and make her mistress of the world. But these thoughts which had burst forth in his head like a bunch of sparks from a blazing house, died away like sparks. First of all was the need to save Lydia. He looked now on the catastrophe from nearby, hence fear seized him again, and before that sea of flame and smoke, before the touch of dreadful reality, that confidence with which he believed that Peter would rescue Lydia died in his heart altogether. Despair seized him a second time, when he had come out on the Via Portuensis, which led directly to the Trans-Tiber. He did not recover till he came to the gate, where people repeated what fugitives had said before, that the greater part of that division of the city was not seized by the flames yet, but that fire had crossed the river in a number of places. Still the Trans-Tiber was full of smoke, and crowds of fugitives made it more difficult to reach the interior of the place, since people, having more time there, had saved greater quantities of goods. The main street itself was in many parts filled completely, and around the Naumachia Augusta great heaps were piled up. Narrow alleys, in which smoke had collected more densely, were simply impassable. The inhabitants were fleeing in thousands. On the way Vinicius saw wonderful sights. More than once two rivers of people, flowing in opposite directions, met in a narrow passage, stopped each other, men fought hand to hand, struck and trampled one another. Families lost one another in the uproar, mothers called on their children despairingly. The young tribune's hair stood on end at thought of what must happen nearer the fire. Amid shouts and howls it was difficult to inquire about anything, or understand what was said. At times new columns of smoke from beyond the river rolled toward them, smoke black and so heavy that it moved near the ground, hiding houses, people, and every object, just as night does. But the wind caused by the conflagration blew it away again, and then Vinicius pushed forward farther toward the alley in which stood the house of Linus. The fervor of a July day, increased by the heat of the burning parts of the city, became unendurable. Smoke pained the eyes. Breath failed in men's breasts. Even the inhabitants who, hoping that the fire would not cross the river, had remained in their houses so far, began to leave them, and the throng increased hourly. The Praetorians accompanying Vinicius remained in the rear. In the crush someone wounded his horse with a hammer. The beast threw up its bloody head, reared, and refused obedience. The crowd recognized in Vinicius an Augustan by his rich tunic, and at once cries were raised round about coal and death to Nero and his incendiaries. This was a moment of terrible danger. Hundreds of hands were stretched toward Vinicius, but his frightened horse bore him away, trampling people as he went, and the next moment a new wave of black smoke rolled in, and filled the street with darkness. Vinicius, seeing that he could not ride past, sprang to the earth and rushed forward on foot, slipping along walls, and at times waiting till the fleeing multitude passed him. He said to himself in spirit that these were vain efforts. Lygia might not be in the city, she might have saved herself by flight. It was easier to find a pin on the seashore than her in that crowd and chaos. Still he wished to reach the house of Linus, even at the cost of his own life. At times he stopped and rubbed his eyes. Tearing off the edge of his tunic, he covered his nose and mouth with it and ran on. As he approached the river, the heat increased terribly. Vinicius, knowing that the fire had begun at the Circus Maximus, thought at first that that heat came from its cinders, and from the Forum Boreum and the Velabruin, which, situated nearby, must be also in flames. But the heat was growing unendurable. One old man on crutches and fleeing, the last whom Vinicius noticed, cried, "Coal and go not near the bridge of Cestius. The whole island is on fire." It was, indeed, impossible to be deceived any longer. At the turn toward the Vicus Judiarum, on which stood the house of Linus, the young tribune saw flames amid clouds of smoke. Not only the island was burning, but the Trans-Tiber, or at least the other end of the street on which Lygia dwelt. Vinicius remembered that the house of Linus was surrounded by a garden. Between the garden and the Tiber was an unoccupied field of no great size. This thought consoled him. The fire might stop at the vacant place. In that hope he ran forward, though every breeze brought not only smoke, but sparks in thousands, which might raise a fire at the other end of the alley and cut off his return. At last he saw through the smoky curtain the cypresses in Linus's garden. The houses beyond the unoccupied field were burning already like piles of fuel, but Linus's little insula stood untouched yet. Vinicius glanced heavenward with thankfulness, and sprang toward the house, though the very air began to burn him. The door was closed, but he pushed it open and rushed in. There was not a living soul in the garden, and the house seemed quite empty. Perhaps they have fainted from smoke and heat, thought Vinicius. He began roll call, Ija, Lija. Silence answered him. Nothing could be heard in the stillness there save the roar of the distant fire. Lija. Suddenly his ear was struck by that gloomy sound which he had heard before in that garden. Evidently the Vivarians near the temple of Aesculapius, on the neighboring island, had caught fire. In this vivarium every kind of wild beast, and among others lions, began to roar from affright. A shiver ran through Vinicius from foot to head. Now, a second time, at a moment when his whole being was concentrated in Lydia, these terrible voices answered, as a herald of misfortune, as a marvelous prophecy of an ominous future. But this was a brief impression, for the thunder of the flames, more terrible yet than the roaring of wild beasts, commanded him to think of something else. Lydia did not answer his calls, but she might be in a faint, or stifled in that threatened building. Vinicius sprang to the interior. The little atrium was empty, and dark with smoke. Feeling for the door which led to the sleeping rooms, he saw the gleaming flame of a small lamp, and approaching it saw the lararium in which was a cross instead of lares. Under the cross a taper was burning. Through the head of the young catechumen, the thought passed with lightning speed, that that cross sent him the taper with which he could find Lydia. Hence he took the taper and searched for the sleeping rooms. He found one, pushed aside the curtains, and, holding the taper, looked around. There was no one there either. Vinicius was sure that he had found Lydia's sleeping room, for her clothing was on nails in the wall, and on the bed lay a capitium, or close garment worn by women next the body. Vinicius seized that, pressed it to his lips, and taking it on his arm went farther. The house was small, so that he examined every room, and even the cellar quickly. Nowhere could he find a living soul. It was evident that Lydia, Linus, and Ursus, with other inhabitants of that part, must have sought safety in flight. I must seek them among the crowd beyond the gates of the city, thought Vinicius. He was not astonished greatly at not meeting them on the Via Portuensis, for they might have left the Trans-Tiber through the opposite side along the Vatican Hill. In every case they were safe from fire at least. A stone fell from his breast. He saw, it is true, the terrible danger with which the flight was connected, but he was comforted at thought of the preterhuman strength of Ursus. I must flee now, said he, and reach the gardens of Agrippina through the gardens of Domitius, where I shall find them. The smoke is not so terrible there, since the wind blows from the Sabine Hill. The hour had come now in which he must think of his own safety, for the river of fire was flowing nearer and nearer from the direction of the island, and rolls of smoke covered the alley almost completely. The taper, which had lighted him in the house, was quenched from the current of air. Vinicius rushed to the street, and ran at full speed toward the Via Portuensis, whence he had come. The fire seemed to pursue him with burning breath, now surrounding him with fresh clouds of smoke, now covering him with sparks, which fell on his hair, neck, and clothing. The tunic began to smolder on him in places. He cared not, but ran forward lest he might be stifled from smoke. He had the taste of soot and burning in his mouth. His throat and lungs were as if on fire. The blood rushed to his head, and at moments all things, even the smoke itself, seemed red to him. Then he thought, colon, this is living fire. Better cast myself on the ground and perish. The running tortured him more and more. His head, neck, and shoulders were streaming with sweat, which scalded like boiling water. Had it not been for Lydia's name, repeated by him in thought, had it not been for her capitium, which he wound across his mouth, he would have fallen. Some moments later he failed to recognize the street along which he ran. Consciousness was leaving him gradually. He remembered only that he must flee, for in the open field beyond waited Lydia, whom Peter had promised him. And all at once he was seized by a certain wonderful conviction, half feverish, like a vision before death, that he must see her, marry her, and then die. But he ran on as if drunk, staggering from one side of the street to the other. Meanwhile, something changed in that monstrous conflagration which had embraced the giant city. Everything which till then had only glimmered, burst forth visibly into one sea of flame. The wind had ceased to bring smoke. That smoke which had collected in the streets was borne away by a mad whirl of heated air. That whirl drove with it millions of sparks, so that Vinicius was running in a fiery cloud as it were. But he was able to see before him all the better, and in a moment, almost when he was ready to fall, he saw the end of the street. That sight gave him fresh strength. Passing the corner, he found himself in a street which led to the Via Portuensis and the Caudete field. The sparks ceased to drive him. He understood that, if he could run to the Via Portuensis he was safe, even were he to faint on it. At the end of the street he saw again a cloud, as it seemed, which stopped the exit. Ay, if that is smoke, thought he, one cannot pass. He ran with the remnant of his strength. On the way he threw off his tunic, which, on fire from the sparks, was burning him like the shirt of Nessus, having only Lygia's capitium around his head, and before his mouth. When he had run farther, he saw that what he had taken for smoke was dust, from which rose a multitude of cries and voices. The rabble are plundering houses, thought Vinicius. But he ran toward the voices. In every case people were there, they might assist him. In this hope he shouted for aid with all his might, before he reached them. But this was his last effort. It grew redder still in his eyes, breath failed his lungs, strength failed his bones, he fell. They heard him, however, or rather saw him. Two men ran with gourds full of water. Vinicius, who had fallen from exhaustion, but had not lost consciousness, seized a gourd with both hands, and emptied one half of it. Thanks, said he, place me on my feet, I can walk on alone. The other laborer poured water on his head. The two not only placed him on his feet, but raised him from the ground, and carried him to the others, who surrounded him, and asked if he had suffered seriously. This tenderness astonished Vinicius. People, who are ye? Asked he. We are breaking down houses, so that the fire may not reach the Via Portuensis, answered one of the laborers. Ye came to my aid when I had fallen. Thanks to you. We are not permitted to refuse aid, answered a number of voices. Vinicius, who from early morning had seen brutal crowds, slaying and robbing, looked with more attention on the faces around him, and said, May Christ reward you. Praise to his name, exclaimed a whole chorus of voices. Linus? Inquired Vinicius. But he could not finish the question, or hear the answer, for he fainted from emotion and overexertion. He recovered only in the Caudete field in a garden, surrounded by a number of men and women. The first words which he uttered were, Where is Linus? For a while there was no answer. Then some voice, known to Vinicius, said all at once, He went out by the Nomentan gate to Astrianum 2 days ago. Peace be with thee, O King of Persia. Vinicius rose to a sitting posture, and saw Shiloh before him. Thy house is burned surely, O Lord, said the Greek, for the Carinae is in flames, but thou wilt be always as rich as Midas. Oh, what a misfortune! The Christians, O son of Serapis, have predicted this long time that fire would destroy the city. But Linus, with the daughter of Jove, is in Astrianum. Oh, what a misfortune for the city! Vinicius became weak again. Art thou seen them? He inquired. I saw them, O Lord. May Christ and all the gods be thanked, that I am able to pay for thy benefactions with good news. But, O Cyrus, I shall pay thee still more, I swear by this burning Rome. It was evening, but in the garden one could see as in daylight, for the conflagration had increased. It seemed that not single parts of the city were burning, but the whole city through the length and the breadth of it. The sky was red as far as the eye could see it, and that night in the world was a red night. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.